and welcome to episode 20 of Unpacking Life's Crazy. This is our Mother's Day episode. But before I get on to that, I wanted to let you know some of the stuff that we have coming up. So our next podcast will be an interview with Dante Barnett, who is a comedian and a producer of comedy shows in Seattle. He also happens to have Asperger's and suffer from anxiety and PTSD, some of those things that I deal with, not the Asperger's. And he's going to come on and have a conversation with us about some interesting topics, including some of his additional difficulties because of the fact he also happens to be a Black man who's over 6 foot tall. So it poses some additional challenges to his disabilities. Unfortunately, the episode with Dante is going to be on podcast only. You won't be able to watch the video because I had a computer malfunction and my iMac decided to just completely crap out on me. So I'm recording this show with the lovely laptop that my youngest gave me for Christmas. So this is what we're doing for now. The other episode that is going to be coming up is with my youngest daughter, Kira, who I interviewed for the very first episode of this podcast about her coming out as transgender. And she's going to check in with me again for Pride Month and talk to us about her progress and how wonderful things are going for her. And as a mama, since this is Mother's Day, she moved out with her girlfriend last week. So, while I'm very proud of her and I'm excited that she's starting her new life, I'm missing her a lot, this especially since it's Mother's Day. So, Kira will come on again and talk to us a little about her process and what she's going through and all that's going on in her life. And so look forward to that as well. So, the usual housekeeping, if you're enjoying the podcast and you're enjoying the material, please smash the button, like, subscribe, because if I know that you're watching and you're interested in hearing what I have to say next, I will produce more stuff for you folks. And because I am a disabled artist, my releases aren't exactly consistent. I have to work around problems like bad fibromyalgia days and IBS, but I will get them out there, and the more people who are listening, the more material I will put out there. So the last thing I have to say before I go on with this is a trigger warning. Yes, it is a trigger warning for a Mother's Day episode because this is not your average Mother's Day celebration. My relationship with my parents is complicated. So there will be discussions of child sexual abuse and some kind of difficult topics of boundaries and dealing with one's mother when that relationship isn't exactly ideal. So if these things are triggering for you, maybe this isn't the episode to watch. And if you still want to watch, but you have some issues with them, you know, keep that in mind. Realize that this might bring up some emotions for you. And that's okay too. We all got to work through our stuff, right? So, Mother's Day. There are many amazing, wonderful, awesome mothers in this world who support their kids in incredible ways. One of the things I want to put out there, which these mothers can't hear me right now, is the number of immigrant mothers who make tremendous sacrifices to try to get their children to a safe country. There are moms with their children waiting at the border still trying to get their children to the United States because they're escaping some pretty horrible things. So I would say that kind of thing is the ultimate in motherly sacrifice, you know? Some of these women have traveled 300 miles with a toddler. You know, it's hard to travel 3 hours in a car with a toddler. Now, imagine packing up everything on your back and taking that small child and walking all those days and hours and not knowing what you're going into just to get your kid to safety. So mothers go to extremes to help their children. Sometimes those extremes are not good things. We also have the crazy helicopter parents who overprotect their children so much they can barely breathe, and that can be an issue as well. Sadly, we don't all have a close-knit relationship with our mothers. That can be especially difficult when Mother's Day rolls around. It reminds us that we don't have what we want with our mom, or that our mothers were not able to provide for us what we needed. Some people have mothers who are addicts, who were in and out of their life, or their relationship was quite damaging. They required their child to take care of them because they were alcoholics or they were drug addicts, and they didn't care for their children like they were supposed to. Some mothers are abusive. Some are just manipulative. Some are hypercritical. There are many reasons why you might have a difficult relationship with your mother. In my case, part of it stems from the fact, and this is something that I've mentioned in other episodes, but if you haven't watched before, my father sexually abused me when I was a child. So the abuse began after the divorce. So I was about 2.5, and I believe it lasted till I was about 7.5. And the abuse did not take place in front of my mother. It took place during visitations. I do bear some resentment towards her about the abuse. I admit that, because she didn't notice, because she didn't realize, because she didn't stop it. So yeah, there is some resentment there. But the resentment, I think, is a little more so because my mother was an educator. So she had training in how to recognize the signs of abuse. And additionally, besides the sexual abuse, my father was a narcissist and verbally abusive and very manipulative. And that part she knew well because she had been married to the man, and that's why she divorced him. So visitations were a real problem for me. Oftentimes I didn't want to go. Oftentimes I was very unhappy when I got back. And in conversations later as an adult, she, you know, would lament that her daughter became this sullen, difficult child. Well, I was sullen and difficult because I was being abused. So I bear some resentment that she did not recognize that and she didn't protect me. But the main reason, the primary reason, was the lack of unconditional love. And what I mean by that is, on one side, in my father's care, I had to do things in order to be loved. I was a prop. When he sold things at the powwows, I was, oh, look at this good dad, this single dad with his kid. Oh, how adorable. So I worked as a prop, and I watched the booth. And so I was useful, and I helped him unload stuff, and I helped him load stuff, and I served a purpose. And if I wasn't serving a purpose, well, then what was my point? And at night, I served the purpose of gratifying him sexually. So that gave me a purpose, and I had to earn my love. And I had to pay close attention to my behavior and close attention to his needs. Constantly, you know, do I need to be doing this? Do I need to be doing that? If I don't do the other thing, I'm going to anger him. And so the walking on eggshells, the trying really hard to be perfect. And as an empath, I could sense when my parents weren't happy, when they were angry with me, when they were disappointed with me, whatever I could. And sometimes I'm sure it wasn't me at all. Children pick up on the emotions of their parents, and they want to make them happy. So anytime they weren't, I'm sure there were a lot of times when I just assumed that they were dissatisfied because something I'd done. And that's the nature of kids in general, but especially if you're sensitive. I was constantly trying to do what was necessary to get left, And so that was on the my father's side. And clearly, as I got older and recognized that that was abusive, and I cut my relationship with him as soon as I started remembering what had happened and working through it and all of that, clearly I didn't want to have a relationship with a narcissistic pedophile. So that was a pretty easy tie to break. But additionally, on my mother's side, the unconditional love was missing as well. But that was on a different level, because I wasn't the child she wanted. I wasn't academically inclined. It just so happened that in addition to all the problems that came from the abuse, which, you know, I don't know if my high anxiety stemmed from the abuse, but I definitely had crazy anxiety, which I'm only now fully realizing the extent of over the last few years. Now that my life has gotten more normal, I'm able to say, oh my gosh, well, yeah, I kind of overreact to some stuff, and I have kind of overreacted to stuff forever. So that anxiety has been there. And of course, it wasn't helped by the fact that I was bullied in school, and then I had learning disabilities. I was diagnosed with dyslexia, although I understand now that it's actually dyscalculia, which means that it isn't so much about the language part of it. It isn't about the reading and the language as much as it is about math and numbers and figures and geography and dates and things like that are way, way more difficult for me. And I have problems with it to this day. Yeah, I did swap. I swapped things a lot when I was little as far as the letters go, but that was an additional learning disability, which not a lot of people know about, which is called Erlene syndrome. And Erlene syndrome is a problem of the eye in the way that the lens filters light. At least this is how I've had it explained to me. So basically, if I look at a white sheet of paper and it has black writing on it, the letters appear to dance around on the page, and I can only focus on a small group of letters at a time. The rest kind of gets fuzzy and wiggly. So the Erlene syndrome wasn't actually diagnosed until I think eighth grade or maybe my freshman year in high school when they figured that out. So I was diagnosed also with, they called it hyperactivity back then. So I'm realizing recently that, oh yeah, I forgot about that diagnosis. And I did a little bit of research. Oh, you know what? You don't really outgrow, now they call it ADD or ADHD. You don't really outgrow it. So I am an adult with ADD, and it is another issue that I deal with on a daily basis. But with the fibromyalgia and the complex post-traumatic stress disorder and the anxiety and the depression, I didn't even really consider how the ADD affects any of it, but additional layer. But all of these things meant that I did not do well in school. I had trouble. I had trouble. And then additionally, because I was the weird kid, and I was weird because I had knowledge and, you know, grown-ups, adults like to say, oh, they're mature beyond their years, or they're an old soul or whatever. Sometimes it's because those kids have been through a lot and they've seen a lot, and they have a more adult perspective because they've been participating in some adult things and they have an understanding of the world that they should not have. And that was my case. So because of all of those things, academically, I was a failure. And I was put in a resource class for reading because they had assumed I had dyslexia, so I needed help reading. And I found this to be especially frustrating on a couple of fronts. The first part of it was the bullying increased, because the way the resource classes worked is when it came time to read in class, an assistant person would come knock on the door and say, okay, it's time to go to your resource class. And I would have to leave the regular class and I would have to go to the special class. And special class to all the other kids, the bullies, was retard class. You're a retard. You're stupid. Now, that wasn't true, and it's a very hurtful term even for those who are developmentally disabled, obviously, and we have reached a point in our society where it is a slur, and people don't, you know, they recognize it as such. I hope that they're not allowed to hurl that insult on the playground like they used to, but that was what would happen to me. And then additionally, as it turned out, I was not stupid, and I was quite capable of reading, and I really enjoyed it. So one of the few activities that I really did with my mother, or that she did with me, she fulfilled her time quota as a mom by reading to me. And that was great in that I learned to appreciate reading when I was little. And by the time I was in, well, I know specifically when I was in fourth grade, I had read a lot of really good books. I would make a library visit every single week with my best friend, and we would go to the little library when I was a little kid, and we would go to story time. One of the mom figures still in my life today is BZ Smith, who was my children's librarian, who would do the story hour every week. And every week we'd go to the library, we'd do our story hour, and then we would pick out books to read. And by the time I had reached fourth grade, I had read Charlotte's Web and Where the Red Fern Grows and Alice in Wonderland and a bunch of really wonderful Roald Dahl books. But the problem in resources, they put you into a class and then they give you this little booklet with the stupidest writing on the face of the planet because they think you're so dumb that you need to grasp the concept of simple sentence structure and things like that. So I went from reading Charlotte's Web to The Brown Fox Jumped Over the Lazy Dog, The Boy Hid Behind the Tree, blah, blah, blah. Boring. So boring. No plot. Nothing interesting about it. It was obnoxious. I hated every minute of it. It was horrible. So in so many ways, school was a nightmare for me. I didn't fit in. I hated the rules. I wasn't as good as everybody else. When we were told to read something in class, they would give us a certain amount of time to read a paragraph. And because of my learning disabilities, my comprehension was fine, but it took me a really long time to get through that one paragraph. And because of my learning disabilities, my spelling was absolutely atrocious. So there was all of this going on. And my mother kind of gave up on me. I wasn't going to be whatever it was she had envisioned me being. She loved school. She found school a safe place where she could follow the rules and be teacher's pet, and it was the place where she fit in. Yeah, I don't think she got along great with the other kids. She was kind of the nerd in the class, I think, from what I had heard. But it was education made her feel safe. The structure made her feel safe. And in general, control makes her feel safe. And that's how she handled being a teacher, too. And she loved being a teacher. She could structure her day with her exact little blocked out pieces of time. And that made her happy. And here she gave birth to an artist with learning disabilities who was way better at painting a picture than I would ever be at structure or rules or fitting into certain boxes. And I tried various things throughout my life to make her happy, to be what she wanted me to be. But I also sensed, as an empath, I wasn't. I didn't, and I couldn't live up to her expectations. And because of this structure, she always had me very specific schedule. And that was also a problem with my insomnia because I had to be at bed at 7 at night every single night until I got to be, bedtime probably changed when I was 11 or something. But it was really early. And this was in the summertime too. So I would go to bed and it was light out for hours and I was in bed. And I had insomnia, so I couldn't sleep. So I would be laying there not sleeping for hours until, you know, 11 or midnight. Unfortunately, that schedule, I found out recently in dealing with my insomnia issues, which you can watch that podcast if you want, is very bad sleep hygiene. It is very bad sleep hygiene to stay in bed when you cannot sleep, because then it trains your mind to not associate your bed with sleep. And when you're imaginative and, you know, there's an additional thing that happens with post-traumatic stress disorder, which is called maladaptive daydreaming. And this I only discovered with my therapist a couple years ago. And basically, when we are unoccupied, we are able to create elaborate scenarios in our heads about sometimes ridiculous things. And I know that some of those scenarios were fantasies about what possible thing I could do that would make me so wonderful and so special that my mom would be really, really proud of me. And she would suddenly think that I was the best kid ever. That never happened. And they were often like, I mean, ridiculous. Like, you know, like we read Huckleberry Finn is like, well, what if I found a cave and it had treasure in it? And then I had all this money and then she wouldn't have to go to work anymore. And then she could stay home and take care of me like my best friend Juliet's mom is a stay-at-home mom. And she could make me Halloween costumes, like my best friend's mom made her Halloween costumes instead of spending all of her time with those other kids at school. And that was an additional, hurt for me, because I knew how much she loved her classes. Every year she adored her class, you know, her class this, her class that, and there would always be a couple of students that I'm sure were like her as a child, who were teacher's pet, who did everything they could to please her. And that made her feel proud, and it made her feel happy. And it made me feel like she obviously likes kids, just not this kid. And that was difficult for me. And she didn't neglect me in the sense that, you know, she wasn't a drug addict. She wasn't an alcoholic. I got my meals every day on clockwork because of her control schedule. I could expect that meals would come at the exact time that you know, they came yesterday and the day before. And weekends were spent with my father. What was lacking was the love. That thing where your child knows that they don't have to be perfect. They don't have to be this or that. You love them. You love them. And you find the things they are good at and you encourage them. And you love that about them. And if they attempt something and they don't do so good, you say, well, you'll do better next time. Keep trying. Keep trying. At some point, I saw that my mother had realized that I was not going to be accomplished academically. And she just kind of let me be. In one way, that was good because I didn't feel quite so much pressure. It was way better than when she was correcting my refrigerator notes with red ink and circling them and writing in the correct spelling. So I couldn't even tell her in a note, I'm gone to my best friend Juliet's house. I'll be back at 5. Because I would come back and discover that I had misspelled back or something. And I had horrible school anxiety. I already got redlined at school. Please don't correct my refrigerator. I was afraid to leave notes because I felt so much anxiety about my own spelling. Feeling that you can't live up to somebody's expectations ever. And that you have to be a certain something or someone in order to earn your parents' love is, it's sad. It's sad and it's hard. And it set me up for feeling like I would never be worthy of somebody's love. I would never live up to the expectations required of me in order to be loved. Now let's fast forward. you know, I continued to try. I continued to try to be what she needed me to be in various aspects. When I got to be a teenager, less so, in part because I was a teenager, and I started trying to figure out what it was going to take to make me happy. And with all of the problems that I had, you know, took years to fully diagnose the post-traumatic stress disorder and to understand the anxiety and why I reacted in the way that I did to certain things. But I didn't fit into high school any better than I fit into elementary school. And I wanted out. I wanted to quit. I wanted to leave. I expressed this to my mother. She would, no way, you can't drop out of high school. But she did agree that if I passed the California High School Proficiency Test, which is the equivalent of graduating from high school, she wouldn't make me go anymore. Fine. And I did pass the California High School Proficiency Test. And that was the end of my sophomore year. I left high school and I started taking some classes at the college. And at that time, I immersed myself in live theater, which was probably one of the better things, the better choices I made in life, because for the first time, I was surrounded by a bunch of weirdos, a bunch of people who all had their own quirks and interesting bits. Of course, you know, in theater, there's a larger group of LGBTQ people and creative people and dyslexic people who get by memorizing their lines a little at a time. They can memorize a script like crazy, but they can't read a script very well. So it's a hodgepodge of creative folks who are disorganized and funny and oddball and accepting of other people who don't fit into the norms of society. So for the first time, I had a tribe. I had a family, and being my mother's only child, and by that time, she had divorced my stepfather, was living alone, and the pickings in the fridge were pretty slim most of the time, and she still had her wanting everything to be completely controlled, only I didn't have to get up at the crack of dawn anymore. And when I was in high school, I mean, if I could have stayed in high school just to do band and drama, I would have continued going for that because I had it set up where I was getting up at the crack of dawn so I could do zero period jazz band at 7 a.m. And then I also had concert band and I also had marching band and I also had drama. So those things I was highly involved in, and I left the high school and now I'm on a theater schedule. So oftentimes we would rehearse until 11 or midnight and I wouldn't get up till 11. Why it would matter to her, I don't know, because as a teacher, I wasn't interfering. She could get up, she could go do her work. That was fine. She didn't see me. That was fine too. But I would get in trouble for little stuff. Like I said, there wasn't a whole lot of food in the house, for example. And I remember one time I got yelled at because I'd had a bowl of cereal and I don't remember why, but I didn't thoroughly wash and put away my bowl and spoon. I had rinsed it out and there was a bowl and a spoon sitting in the sink. And when she came back, she got very angry with me and said, "You left this big mess in the kitchen. It's a spoon and a bowl." That is, you know, so it was things like that. Another time, I came home at, I want to say it was around 7. It was actually kind of early for me to get home. I don't remember what was going on. But I came home at 7, and I found my mom sitting at the table with a plate of food sitting beside her, fuming. She was absolutely furious at me. And I was like, "What?" She said, I spent all this time making this dinner for you and you don't even show up. I'm like, this is the first time you've made dinner in a month. How was I supposed to know that there would be a meal? And this was before cell phones, folks, so I couldn't have called. It wasn't like you just pick up the phone and say, hey, or text somebody or whatever. And I had no idea she had any expectation of me showing up at all. So were there incidences like this? And then also, she had a habit of locking the deadbolt because now she was single. And I guess, looking back at it, I guess she was afraid someone was going to break in and rape her. I have no idea why. So she had taken to locking the deadbolt when she went to bed. And I asked her, please don't do that because I don't have a key to the deadbolt. So I would come home after rehearsal, sometimes really late because that's how theater rehearsal is. And so I got home at midnight, the deadbolt was locked, and I rang the bell. So she had to get out of bed at midnight. Then I had to get yelled at about waking her up and blah, blah, blah. Well, I'm sorry I woke you up. I didn't mean to wake you up. Could you please just not lock the deadbolt? Just lock the other one and then I can just get in and then it's not a problem and I'll have to wake you up. And the very next night, she locked the deadbolt again. And now I'm terrified because I have anxiety. I'm trying really hard not to make her angry. I really am. But everything I do is making her angry. It's really upsetting her. And I hate getting yelled at. And I hate feeling like I'm this horrible person. So I stayed in my car in the driveway with the car running because it happened to be like 30 degrees that night. It was really cold. And so I fall asleep in my car in the driveway. And I was awakened by her coming out to get ready for to leave the next morning. Shouting at me for having fallen asleep with the car running. And if I'd been parked in the garage, I could have died of carbon monoxide poisoning. And I got yelled at again. And so it was going like this. It was very stressful. It was very frustrating. And at the same time, I'm starting to have the memories of the abuse that happened. I'm trying to figure everything out. And we have a big blowout. And my mother says, if you can't live by my rules, then get out of my house. And I'm sure when she said it, she thought, well, this will make her shape up. It didn't. I packed up and got the hell out. It's like, fine. Clearly you don't want me here. I am not welcome. So I left. And then she felt bad about it. So she did pay for me to stay at the college dorms. Because I was at the junior college, so that was helpful. But I also had to work to have food, gas, or anything like that. So at that time, I was 16. I was staying in the dorms. I was taking college classes. I was doing theater. I was working various jobs. By that time, if you'll look at my episode, A Woman of Many Hats, you'll see how many ridiculous jobs I had. But some of them were at the theater. Some of them were cleaning hotel rooms, the historic hotel, lots of different things I was doing to scrape by. And at various times, I would reconnect with my mom, but it was always strained. It was always me feeling like nothing I could ever do would be good enough. So I wound up meeting a guy in theater. I wound up getting married and I had kids. After I had kids, my mom reconnected a bit more. I think she really wanted to have a relationship with her grandchildren and I didn't prevent that. I still never felt safe or supported or celebrated or wanted. At one point when we were living in Costa Rica, I was trying to reach out and stay connected so I give her a call. And she's like annoyed with me and she says, you know, I'd really prefer it if you would just send me an email, write me a letter about what's going on in your life. And then I can respond when I have the time. Okay. I'm going to schedule a call with her or send her an email because she didn't want to take the time out of her life. Okay. At this time, she was retired. It's not like she was still teaching school when I was interrupting. I don't know what important thing I was interrupting. But it was very clear that if I wanted a relationship with her, it had to be on her terms, on her rules, on her schedule. I even went back to school. I graduated. I am deeply in student debt right now. And part of that was because I needed to prove to her that I was a smart, intelligent person, which again, I've been trying to prove that to myself also, because of because of my childhood. But I was still trying so hard to be what it was she wanted me to be. And that was a big part of why I went back to school online and why I graduated. And we even did a little graduation party when I graduated. It's like, yay, I finally done something that my mom can be proud of. I was 40 years old, still trying to make my mother happy. And I finally realized that was impossible. No matter what I did, no matter who I became, she just really didn't want to be happy with me, and she really wasn't going to ever like my company. She wasn't ever going to be happy with me, and she never had been. And that's a hard thing. That's a hard thing to accept. It's hard to accept. However, I finally, when I made this realization, also decided how toxic this relationship was. It was incredibly toxic. It's incredibly toxic. At some point, she told me, people have relationships based on what they get from them, what they get out of that other person. That's how they have relationships. And I mean, as adults, that's true. That is very true. I mean, in that hopefully you're getting from your relationships what I get from my relationships with my friends is we get along. We share common interests. We support each other when we're feeling down. We like to laugh together and share stories. And, you know, it's not a monetary thing, absolutely. And it's not that they have big houses or boats they lend me or I don't know what. It's just what I get out of it is their friendship. And I enjoy that very much. But when it comes to your children, that's not how the relationship works. I have two children. And when I got pregnant, I didn't want a boy or a girl. Me, yeah, one or the other would be fine. What gender they were going to be wasn't an issue. What they were going to be like wasn't an issue either. I mean, I planned to have them. I loved them before they were born. I loved them after they were born. And then I discovered who they were. And I learned to love who they were, what the things that they liked. And they have their own unique personalities. They came into the world as who they are. And I encouraged their gifts and watched to see who they were going to become. But they didn't have to be anything for me to love them. They didn't have to fulfill any task or duty. I mean, yeah, of course you want your child to be obedient and kind and all those kinds of things. Sometimes they're not. But they also knew that if they had a meltdown or broke something or whatever, I was still going to love them. And as I'm now out in the world and being around more kinds of people and seeing their relationships with their parents, and I see what a normal relationship with a mother often looks like. And one of those things is, for example, when somebody is feeling sick, they're feeling sick or they're feeling down, a lot of times they immediately think of their mother. You know, they want to be taken care of. They think of their mother. When I was sick or having bad fibro days, if I were to find out that my mother were coming to visit, it's like, oh no, no, I'm already having a bad day. I can't also take a visit from my mother. I can't handle that. And that's sad. So rather than keep fighting it, rather than beating my head against the wall for a relationship that I knew was never going to change, and continuing to have uncomfortable conversations and unpleasant holidays, knowing that every single time I would leave with a knot in my gut, feeling like I wasn't good enough, I decided I was done. I was done. So as I said, there are many wonderful, wonderful mothers out there who do their very best to be emotionally supportive. And, you know, some of them have to work crazy jobs and don't get to spend as much time with their kids as they want. And they're doing their best. And I would say the one thing that separates a good mother from one that's not is love. Does your child feel loved? When something horrible happens in their life, do they think of you? Do they want your comfort if something's going wrong? If something wonderful happens in their life, are you someone that they want to tell? So if you have a difficult relationship with your mother, if it isn't healthy, if it's toxic, and every time you spend time with her, you leave feeling inadequate, not good enough, angry, frustrated, hurt. If that is your relationship with your mother, then maybe it's time you do something for yourself and walk away from the relationship. There's a lot of people who will tell you that you owe your mother, you owe your mother, you owe your mother. Just because you came out of someone's vagina doesn't necessarily mean that you owe them the debt of your own sanity and your own mental health for the rest of your life. You, as a grown person, have a right to decide what relationships you want to have and what relationships are healthy for you. In my case, it wasn't. And I have since gathered a tribe of lovely people. And I do have some older ladies in my life who are my surrogate mothers when it's time for mom advice, when it's that, you know, you want to ask an older lady's opinion, you want to have somebody give you their advice on dealing with adult children, for example. You know, I have my dear friend Sharon South, who I keep in touch with regularly. Beezy, who I mentioned, she's my storytelling mentor, and she's a big help with her advice. I keep in touch with a high school teacher. My high school drama teacher, actually, Kristen Fulton. I still have lunch with her on occasion. I think it's important for us to have those kinds of connections. Unfortunately, mine just doesn't happen to be with my biological mother. And the other thing we can learn if we don't have a good relationship with our own mothers is how to evaluate that and learn to be a better mother to our own children. So on Mother's Day, I have a special appreciation for my children, who are both wonderful and amazing, and I love them very much, and I miss them very much. I've adjusted to missing my eldest since she got married and moved away. But I'm struggling a little bit because I miss my youngest, who was actually sleeping in this very room just a week ago. So, sorry. The one thing that I was able to do is end that generational trauma. And I know that I am not the perfect mother by any means. And my fibromyalgia and insomnia and things like that have made certain parts of parenting more difficult. You know, I regret little things like not making them breakfast every morning. And there's little things that I do regret. And I made mistakes, and I've admitted them. My kids know that I don't think I'm perfect. But regardless of my mistakes and my imperfections, what I do know that they know is that I love them. And I will always love them. And no mistake or gender change or anything else is ever going to stop that. They will always have my love. And that, I think, is what comes down to being a really good mother. Do your children know that you're proud of them? Do they know that you love them? Do they know that you will always love them? Because that's what matters most. And they know that I will help them in any way that I can. A lot of times it's not financial because that hasn't been my situation. But they need help dyeing their hair. I'll help them. They want me to make a quiche for them? I'll make them a quiche. My main point is celebrate the mothers that deserve celebrating. And if your mother just happens not to be one of them, that's not your fault. It's time for you to hand that responsibility over to the woman who chose not to be the mother you needed. If your mother chose not to like you, that's on her. You're enough. Whoever you are, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, you're enough. And regardless of whose expectations you didn't live up to, you deserve to be loved because every single one of us does. There is no requirement. You don't have to be a certain height. You don't have to be a certain weight. You don't have to have a certain education level. You don't have to be neurotypical. You don't have to have both legs or both arms. A mother should love you exactly as you are. So on this Mother's Day, I hope that you are celebrating with an amazing mother or grandmother or whatever female figure in your life was there for you. I personally am going to make some phone calls to some of the ladies in my life who made a huge difference to me and accept the fact that my biological mom and I are probably never going to have a relationship. But that's okay. My kids will be reaching out to me and I'll have my own, hopefully, Mother's Day Zoom call with them because they're both far away now. Celebrate your moms. Enjoy the moms who have gone out of their way to make you feel loved and cared for and done their very best to help shape you into a person that they enjoy being with. And until next time, take care of yourself and the ones you love.